Good evening. It's Wednesday night, and as promised, it's 7 o'clock, and it's the next week, and it's still the ABD, Ivan. We're still on the American Book of the Dead, and in a certain way, it's an artifact that will never leave us, even though we're only going to take, we've taken a very short time in looking at it, just 56 weeks, and but it's a tool that as you develop, and Harry, I think your group is starting in on it. Is that right?
That is correct. We've had 3 weeks on it already.
Yeah. So they're working their way through it as a group. And it's always alive somewhere in the universe of the Institute. It's somebody's doing a reading. Mm-hmm. We're working at it. We did a... And I think some people can say fairly a more in-depth look at it during these last 56 weeks, Ivan.
Right.
With you and Pat and George and Harry helping out and everybody online. But others are doing it too, and I'm starting to get the requests from other communities even that want to work with the ABD as a tool.
Interesting.
Right.
And as Marvetta is saying, that we've brought it into a very practical modality here, and we've, in a sense, we've shattered the veil between the reader and the material. And what we've what we've determined to do is that we want to show the reader that this material is your life too. This is part of what your life is, right? And this is part of what your life is. And let's look at various aspects of it. And in a certain way, I can't think of a better chamber to exhibit that than Chamber 46. And if you recall, last week we got, I'd say about maybe halfway through 46. And then I had to stop because there was so much more to cover that I thought was important to cover. And so this is actually part two of Chamber 46. And that's where we are now. So I want to pick up on where we left off.
Paragraph 5, I believe, David.
And it was paragraph 5. And paragraph 5 is the one that starts, "I'll concentrate fully." And if we recall in the previous paragraphs, suddenly the Voyager is in a different relationship to the work in the Bardos. There, the Voyager has come forth and stood up in a certain way and says, "I will be born," right?
Mm-hmm.
What a comment that is when you read it with that much, when you read it clearly and you really put yourself in the position of the Voyager, which any good reader will learn to do. They are a conduit. For information, if you're a reader, what you do is you become a conduit in passing information on to the Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the Voyager is waiting to hear these words. It says, "I will be born." And that's a powerful thing. That means that in a certain way, the Voyager's come back into more power. "I will be born" as a being in the line of the teaching within the school of the teaching. That's asking a lot. If you're able to ask that within, if that's your intention, boy, that's a lot, right?
David, yes. He seems to be, you know, evoking it and demanding it, not really asking for it. It's a decision that seems to have already been made.
"I will be born." And the Voyager saying, "I will be born." The decision that's been made, and there's a freshness to that kind of a posture that the Voyager is taking. And we know that intention is a slippery slope. On the one hand, you can passively visualize something, but this has got a character to it, wouldn't you say, Ivan, of determination?
Yeah, determination, yes.
Yeah. So the Voyager sits there, but then And then the last part of the chamber, and the part we're going to cover tonight, starts to lay down the law, in a sense. And the Voyager says, I'll concentrate fully on this intention. That doesn't mean that it's kind of a passing thought. It'd be nice if that could happen. It says, I concentrate fully. Think of that. Most of us have not had a moment when we can fully lend ourselves to anything, when we can say with full, veracity, I will do this. My passion is 100% for it. But think of that. Fully concentrate. I'm imbued 100%. And that will open up a suitable womb. And then as we spoke last week, and immediately upon entering such a womb, I will sanctify it. So we must start to understand a little bit about what it means for us individually to sanctify a space. George, if I will, I know that you have a particular practice.
Yes, I do.
And when you enter into that practice, it's not just in any haphazard manner. Is that correct?
No, that's right. Of course, it's taken some time and experience to familiarize myself with this. But for me now, it's like flipping a light switch. I understand how to invoke my presence and be in a special womb that I'm trying to grow, to gestate within.
He's gestating within it, and the space is sanctified.
Yeah.
And it's in a certain way. I've had the opportunity to visit the space, and it's he's able to hermetically seal it, Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
Because then only one thing occurs in that space. That is an example of how sanctification takes place for George,
mm-hmm.
for the work he's doing. He has a lot of miles in it. Mm-hmm. And so each of us must develop for ourselves what sanctification might mean. Okay? Very important. That's work you need to do. That's homework. You need to take it home. How do I sanctify? What could it mean to you? Do you sit in a posture? What are the lights like? What's the smell like? Are there other people there? Is it light, dark, dimmed light? What are the attributes in the space? And this is something that occurs also in group work. And in a certain way, Harry, I don't know, how do you open your group meetings in any particular manner?
We have done, yes, we do, and we have changed it as we have evolved. Currently, for this book, we open with the vows of the Buddha. It's on, I think it's from Chambers 36.
Yeah.
And then we finish with the quatrain and the end of our
And then you close it. That's exactly what I do. It's what I do with all the classes that I do online, is I open it with the Bodhisattva vow and close
right.
it with the and it's
exactly what we do.
Very potent.
I've
been doing that for years. And on Sunday it's the practical work on self class, and they're mostly Spaniards, so I do it in English, and then somebody does it in Spanish, and it's mystical. Okay. Sanctify. How do you sanctify your space? It's not something that happens automatically. We're in the world where it's intention and effort that makes it happen. Okay? Then as we move ahead a bit, temple dedicated to the beloved, who is myself as the clear light, I'll ask the beloved to transmit the teaching to me during that lifetime. It's within my power and right to direct the actions of the beloved in bringing about my liberation. So once again, it's like you're asking, and you're asking for this movement to occur. And I quoted something from that's actually attributed to Goethe, but is not his work. And he says, concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, that ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, if you are ignorant of this. That the moment that one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves to. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. Like when you step into that path and you determine other things, and as some people say, magical things occur. It's just that your intention has been made whole and been made known, and the universe responds in a very certain way. Okay? So it's intention here. Calling forth the beloved within is the clear light, and you're calling on that. You're calling, you're working toward that. That's what the beloved is there for. But, and this is very interesting, this is what stopped me last week, Ivan, this last sentence here.
Good one. Yeah.
But I have to ask for it before it will come about. I will be sure to ask. And so I pose the question, what does it mean to ask? Let's have a little conversation about that. What does it mean to ask, period? What do you think over there, Dan? How would you ask? How would one ask? I'm not asking that big a question. I'm not saying how do you ask for liberation. It says, I will be sure to ask. And so I'm just asking a simple question. How do you go about developing the habit of asking? I'll include ask for help.
We put aside the machine, David. We have to ask that from essence.
That's an intentional effort, right, Harry?
Absolutely.
So it's nothing that you can just... Well, you see people passively ask, I need help, I need help. But that's not the passivity we're talking about. We're talking about a high intention. That's why I read the Goethe quote, because I wanted... You move, and then the universe will move for you. But your intention is all there. That's a sacred moment when you stand in that place of intentionality and you say, I ask. Like
the machine can't really ask, David, in my experience. It won't ask. It's too proud to do it.
So we have to work with the machine all the time because we are locked into the machine, and it's a common battle to work with the habits of the machine. And as Silverdale has told us, you know, that's the historical personality. And it's just trained. That's how we were trained, okay? Like it's like a semi-truck barreling down the road at 80 miles an hour. That's what it does. Right? Boom. So how do you then divert it? One thing you could do is stand in front and put your hand up, right? And there's this semi-truck, and you just say, oh, would you stop? And what does it tend to do? You just get barreled over. I mean, it doesn't even hiccup in a case like that, right?
Right. You'd be run over.
You'd just be run over. So what can you possibly do? What's the ways and means that you've developed in this regard?
Well, to stop the truck, you have to be in the driver's seat.
Okay. Not bad. But the driver, the regular driver, is just intent on getting their job done fast. So you get to those one of those great truck stops and have a nice big meal of biscuits and gravy and a nice Swiss steak on the side. Yum.
So you have to alert the driver.
Well, or you could think of it as sidestepping, you know, instead of trying to deal with a force, an irresistible force meeting with a immovable object or an indomitable will or something. You know, it may be that you, let's say, you're vacating the ego, you're vacating the machine. So it's the pride, arrogance, you know, the sense of isolation that you're not in need of help. You're you know, apart from everybody else and everything else. And but you know, so you need to be changing your state from that. You need to be changing your vibrational signature, changing your awareness, or changing your location, maybe. But I mean, you know, I think that there's a lot of the exercises we talk about are talking about dealing with subtlety, you know, making a move that's elegant but more subtle.
To
get away from that pride and selfishness or arrogance.
We've talked a lot about, and then George has mentioned over the years, that in a certain way, the ABD, you have to have all of the other books in hand to work with some of this material. You have to have everything at your beck and call. And if we look at the HBM, you know, and some of the other material talks about the sly man, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can just practice doing things, you know, like you start to, let's say you're at the store and you say, oh, can you hold the door for me?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get to the market from here? You know, I mean, you could gut it out. That's not the point. Of course you can gut it out. But can you leave your silo of isolation for a moment and say, where's the potatoes in the grocery
mm-hmm.
store? Or what do you know about these green beans? It says organic, but it also says Mexico. Is that the same organic word that I know?
Mm-hmm.
You just ask somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And gradually, you're asking people for help. Does this make sense? Does this make sense to anybody? You see how it's like you're just skipping around the semi-truck, and you find ways to engage other people and ask them.
So
you know, David, one of the things I find of interest in this particular chamber, in preparation for learning how to ask, is this fellow has asked that he would take birth with a mother and father who are the embodiments of the labyrinth guide, right? And who are in the realm of the practice of the teaching. So what that with that kind of an influence in our early lives, we develop a certain informedness. That is, we're provided with a certain amount of knowledge or information or ideas that make it conducive for us to engage in simplicity, sincerity, and gratitude. So it doesn't. So we actually acquire the ability to ask for help because we've grown up in the environment and we've dedicated our body as a temple, a sacred place. So to ask, I think, begins with a certain degree of informedness. Humility, I suppose, would be a part of that, in which case we're no longer ego-driven or ego-dominated, but we relax enough to allow our essential self to ask for help when necessary.
You know what, George, that made me think of something else.
What's
you
that?
You said that we will, I'll seek a rebirth with a father and mother who are embodiments of the labyrinth guide.
Right.
Wait a minute, what does that mean, Ivan? What are they going to look like? So I was born at some point, and the
Happy
mother
birthday.
That... Thank you.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Birthday, David's birthday.
And when I was born, my birth mother, the only actual knowledge I have of my birth date is a little piece of paper that somebody else made up called my birth certificate. That's what I depend on. I don't know if it's true. But this birth mother then gave me up for adoption. And check this out. I was given up for adoption into a family that was, I don't know what her family was like, but this family was a family of high culture. You know, my mother was a fine artist. My father was a professor, you know, for when we were in middle school. Instead of buying, toys or whatever the heck it is, what did they buy? Encyclopedia Britannica and the great books of the Western. That's what was, my mother was subscribed to, you know, the great art magazines of the time. We listened to original recordings of Sergei Rachmaninoff playing his material. So that's a different culture that somehow I got to. I was born in one and yet wound up in this other one. How do we then recognize people of, read that same phrase again, I think. How do we recognize a father and mother? In that I was born.
The woman to transmit the teaching.
I was born as a being, and I will be born in that paragraph. I will be born.
This one. I will take birth with a father and mother who are embodiments of the labyrinth guide and who are within the realm of the practice of the teaching.
So doesn't it seem like it's something that we can learn about now in this lifetime? And how do we do it? We can do it by staying in our little silo and hope that the person just feels right. Or you can ask. Mm. Are you in the line of the teaching? Doesn't always go across well at the produce shop, but.
Well, maybe. I mean, I thought what you were driving at before was saying that we get ready for the between lives experience, the labyrinth experience, by practicing, you know, how do I get to City Hall or whatever. It's just a matter of practicing the process, which could say, which is like a version of, let's say, I enlist the machine, or, you know, I get the machine to collaborate, or I work with me, you know, on developing an essence process, an essence ability to ask these questions. But now you seem to be talking about something else, which is saying, like, the, you know, how about if I'm, forget about that I'm not in the labyrinth now, I am in the labyrinth now, so time to start asking for help.
Now.
I mean, and this is like, you know, this is beginning. Well,
David,
you know, go ahead.
Excuse me.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, I mean, we know from a previous chamber that we deal with demons in this lifetime when we can really do some work that we dreamed about and had were haunted by in the between life states, in the Bardo states. So that's a continuation of this idea.
It very much
you
is.
Actually learn to ask for it right here.
Right here, right now, and I surround myself with a father and mother who are in the line of the teaching right now.
Well, it seems to me that there's a very strong message in this chamber that this is the time, this is the life that I need to use, that I need to craft or direct in order to be of value to all beings everywhere, to all sentient beings.
Wow.
But it says when I'm in the labyrinth, in other words, I have to get myself in practice or liberated, so that when I go through the labyrinth experience again, I will do something for the benefit of all sentient beings.
For the benefit of all sentient beings.
Well, which is to say, you know, not to be just entrapped by the inexorable grinding process
and fear
of the scandal, whatever, yeah, or whatever the machine dictates. Or
we won't be unprepared once again.
Well, and competence comes through preparation. What?
Yeah, competence comes through preparation.
Competence comes through preparation.
Precisely.
We will be more competent to the extent that we are practicing this now. So it's a big deal to get outside, and I know that a integral part of your practice, Silverdale, is you go out and you practice this stuff, right?
Absolutely. Today was another good day.
So you go out of your cocoon, you go out of your safe space, and you practice.
Mm-hmm.
These things. You practice by asking, you know, basically you can say, are you part of the teaching lineage?
Mm-hmm.
You, of course, can't use those terms, but you never know what is Hawk Lady on?
I don't think so, David. There are some comments, by the way.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and read
the comments?
Yeah,
let's hear the comments.
Molly Midway asks, ask for it right here. Right
yes.
Now, this is the time, this is the life that I need to use in order to be of value to all beings everywhere.
And this is what Ivan was saying.
Beings.
Beautiful, beautiful statement, Molly, because that's exactly what Ivan was saying too, is that if I can see that I am in the labyrinth, think about this for a minute. If you can recognize that you are in the labyrinth right now, and you are, that's when you can be really of service to all beings everywhere.
You see, I could also be choosing my appropriate parents right now, even though I have no way of changing that. It's like something, what I get out of what you're saying, David, it's like most of us here, I can't speak for everybody online, but I would guess that in our circle, most of us were not raised up from childhood in a school, let's say in a family that was associated with this school or any other school, although it may be the case for some people. But generally, we came to this as young adults or, you know, at some point in our adult lives. But I'm thinking like, okay, well, has this happened for me before? You know, were these the parents, the father and mother of my lifetime, this lifetime, were they embodiments of the labyrinth guide? Well, I mean, I'm here, I'm talking with you, we're reading this book for some of us for the umpteenth time, and we're dealing with a teaching here, so actually, if I sort of illuminate backwards, you know, in my family life, well, yeah, it's much like what David was saying. Gee, my parents were very enlightened in some ways. They had these certain values, and they taught certain principles or ideas to their children, which we then carried through adolescence, maybe somehow, into adulthood, and, you know, those things. In other words, there's like, gee, how grateful should I be that my parents weren't this kind of people who laid heavy, heavy conditioning on me, heavy belief systems, hard to break out of, like very strong behavioral guidelines and whatever else, you know, would have kept me from arriving here, let's say.
For my part, I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful. I had a great childhood, you know. Yeah, of course there was traumas and there were this and that and stuff, but my God, look what I came up with. Look at this. Look at where I am right now. It's like, for me, this is the home run. This is a grand slam home run to be at this moment, at this time, being able to speak actively with these ideas.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking again of this idea that if I can have a moment, if I can even have a moment of awakening, that can extend to people around me. It can extend to people in my life and so on.
Say more about that.
If I can string together, I love this image that comes from somewhere in EJ's talks or his writing about the string of pearls. If I can string together these moments of awakening and make a a mala, you know, you know, I can connect together the
string of
island.
Beads.
What is it?
String of beads.
String of beads or pearls, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the islands, you know, those moments of awakening, they are connected with one another and they tend to become more and more connected and so on. But I really like this idea of also awakening backwards in my, you know.
In your lineage.
Yeah, in the time track, in my life, I can discover the awakened moments from my childhood. I can have an awakening influence on my parents who are no longer alive. I can...
personally believe that.
Yeah.
That I can have an effect on my dead parents.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, you know, when we're talking about this idea of transformation,
yeah.
Right?
I'm your mom.
No, what about this, the whole idea of transformation? It's like you're saying, oh, well, like if I'm transformed, if I can work at transforming myself in some small way, so then that has an effect going forward, right? Well, now, oh, look, I've now become the butterfly. You know, I get out of the cocoon that I spent years spinning or whatever, and now I've hatched and so on. But I love this idea that it can also
be retroactive.
Yeah, like reach backwards into the roots of my work or my awakening. You know, my what string of events led me to arrive at the doorstep of this teaching, you know, and open this book and find it somewhere. I know there are some people, I'm sure there are some people even in this circle today, who's the reason that they are here is because they found this book. I know there are people in our circle that they found the red book, you know, that actually this is what brought them to the teaching. It wasn't true in my case, but it was a blue book. It was just it was some other book that did the trick along with you know, some help from my friends, you know, a little help from some guides, whether they knew it or not, you know, got me here.
We can think of it linearly or non-linearly.
Yeah.
And for me, it's non-linear,
the
series of events that occurred. In a certain way, I was meant to be here, and I was drawn here by my intention. I didn't understand the intention for years.
This is kind of what I'm talking about. See, you were drawn here by your intention, which you didn't understand. But see,
that's right.
Now you're developing an understanding. Oh, guess what? You were probably drawn to this lifetime where even though you weren't born into that family, you got to be raised by that family because they had all these wonderful art books and the Encyclopedia Britannica and like a culturally rich household and a contact with the arts and a lot of open-mindedness about belief systems or something. I would say that was true of my parents. And this may not be true, of course, of everybody in the circle, but I'm saying this is like I get to appreciate more. Actually, the older I get, the more I appreciate the gift of, you know, of some of my parents' child-rearing practices.
Yeah.
How beneficial they were for me in this lineage, in this teaching.
So,
David, there are more comments.
Yeah, go ahead and read them, Harry. Please.
Rocky says, it makes sense since we are told that the parallel present, past, and future lives are happening simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
Then what we do now affects it all. And he goes on to say, EJ said somewhere something like the present is the cause of the past causing the present.
Oh boy, I like that.
So hold that in your mind for a moment and begin to carry the weight of the present moment and the responsibility you have for the present moment, because when you start to step into the world of responsibility, you're responsible for all the people. Okay? The second line of the Bodhisattva vow is the number of beings is endless.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the comeback is?
And we vow to liberate them all.
I vow to liberate them all. Mm-hmm.
Not like seven of them.
Not part of them.
Or
pretty bold.
Cat. And, you know, I've concentrated on that, the Bodhisattva vow, a lot. And it's a series of four impossible riddles.
Mm.
It's impossible. How can you possibly, like, help everybody?
What's the story about throwing the yogurt in the lake?
Ah. So we can help.
Isn't that a nasty
story? Because if we work to actually become free, we've lifted the mantle from mankind just a little bit. And that's a thing of great wonder. Okay, beautiful. Okay, what else you got there, Harry?
That's pretty much it. I think, David, let me check. That's all I have on my screen.
Good. So then it goes on. If I can't ask the beloved for help, then that's called pride and arrogance of ego. If I can't ask, then I'll just have to suffer more until I can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real clear formula there. Can you ask the beloved to come forth? And the moment I do ask to bring about my liberation, the beloved will do it. It responds. That's because the beloved is the component of my consciousness that has the single job of liberating me. That's its only function. How does that read to you, George?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is George told us all the time? He keeps telling us over and over again, we are the divine spark of the divine, right?
Well, one third of us is a particle of divinity. It is the basis for the statement we have an essential self. And what we're trying to do is build a bridge between that particle of divinity and our physical body and what turns out to be our historical personality that navigates the waters of our environment.
And we can do that by practices the methodology that we've been discussing for the last 56 weeks. This methodology, there are ways and means to achieve this.
I just want to underscore the fact that so much of what we do is a function of our informedness. What do we know about anything across the entire spectrum of experience? What is our informedness, and what kind of knowledge or information do we have? And the value of this book is that we're seeing things through the eyes of our essential self, particle of divinity, learning to see. We're learning how to see through the eyes of our essential self, and in that informedness, our historical personality begins to modify itself. You know, it's this mutual reciprocal initiation, as EJ talks about in Human Biological Machine.
So this is why each person has to leave the theory and find specific ways and means for yourself as you go through the day. You have to craft your life in this. It says here, there's a safety factor to ensure I won't be automatically liberated till I'm ready for it. I have to consciously and deliberately ask for my liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Consciously ask for my liberation. And in a certain way, I say, can you say to yourself, can you do that? Do you believe you can do that? Can you believe you can consciously ask for your liberation of your beloved?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that.
You can if you're in your essential being.
Yeah.
Well, so
otherwise
maybe
you wouldn't ask it.
What if your essential, but your essential being is such a little baby thing there? So what?
The babies make lots of noise.
So make a little noise.
Yeah, they make noise, all right. I'm relating to that this is going to be my essential self. It's going to be from a very essential standpoint. I'm going to be feeling very strongly what I'm not. What I'm not merged with, what I'm separated from, yeah. And I, you know, maybe one form of asking that is, oh, I haven't had enough of this. Get me out of here.
So that's what happens to some.
I'm just thinking that's one formulation is get me out of here.
But to ask for liberation, ask of the beloved to bring forth the liberation for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form. But it's got to be conscious, or this is real clear. I have to consciously and deliberately ask, do you think that you will do that tomorrow, later today?
I'm thinking that this is going to take work to get to this point. On the other hand, that may be my belief. That could be a belief system. That it takes a certain kind of work over a certain period of time to get to this point.
So if you operate with that work, if you test the premise, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Test the premise of actually asking, how does the asking take form? That's what I was asking earlier. What I was talking about before was sidestepping the machine and the semi-truck. But now I'm saying, ask as well as you're able to ask from this position of interiority.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Can you feel the yearning to get back? Can you feel the sensation of that particle of divinity, as George is calling it for us? Can you sense that sometimes, and that you want to be merged with that? You want to build that, those bridges? Mm-hmm. Sure you can. That's a form. I know a lot of practices are kind of meditation, quiet the mind, and things like this. This is a more active form of, would you call this meditation, George?
Boy, you know, I think of it as a natural process like breathing, but to get there, you know, it certainly starts with meditation or focusing and concentrating on what our objective or our vision of our aim is.
I would call this real will, developing the essential self will,
the will of the essential
the will
self.
Of the essential self.
I know that some of us believe that it just happens and then suddenly you have the will. I don't see any evidence for that. I mean, I see evidence of people being born in an extraordinary manner, you know, like people like, E.J. Gold or Lee Loswick. These are extraordinary individuals. But I don't think I was born that way, but I can practice. Okay? So we have a couple of homework of someone is like, how do you sanctify stuff? Now this, how do you ask this interiority? Where do you stand when you ask? This is a tough chamber.
David, it still seems to me that you're claiming it as your heritage.
You're claiming it as your heritage, and that's what I hear from Silverdale a lot too, is to reclaim that heritage. And there's a willfulness in saying it the way I'm saying it, but the actual practice is just a deliberate, day in and day out, practice of standing in that position of asking. Mm-hmm. Maybe at some point the weight is such that something happens.
Niespel Spark says, I need help right here, right now.
Yeah. That's an example of asking from the essential self. And if you truly can ask from that place, then you've shed the body. You've shed your, it's not that you've shed it, it's that you stand in a different command place. You're not asking from the machine, you're not asking from the body, you're asking from the essential self. Beautiful, well written. Deliberately ask for liberation and then trust the beloved to bring about the conditions of my liberation. That's really a tricky little phrase, trust the beloved. That's not something that the machine does, Harry.
That's correct.
So this is this terminology that I've brought up a lot is what I call active surrender. You trust it because you have reason to trust it because you've worked hard. You've worked with it. You know what it looks like. You know what it feels like. Then I'll just take my liberation. Okay? That's all there is to do it. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
The snap, right? He's shaking
that word,
his head over here.
Well, that word earlier in this paragraph is that word automatically. So I think that's, you know, that appears in the human biological machine also, I believe, a couple of times. It's a curious idea.
Well, Ivan, it says, the next paragraph says, all I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Simple. All I have to do is rid.
Get rid of.
Distrust,
sleep, unconscious actions,
ego
struggle, desires, attachments, passions, and aggressions.
Right.
Simple.
That's all you need to do. What?
Saturday afternoon.
Get the lawnmower out, right?
This is like,
then I'll throw away my pride and arrogance and ask for help. It's no good to ask for help when I'm down. It's when I'm God that I ask for help of liberation. That's when it will do some real good. Wild. You know, in a sense we go, oh, well, yeah, I understand that. But also in this chamber is this boldness that comes through.
Yeah, it is. It's look where it is in the journey, in the voyage. I mean, you know, this is like saying, you know, I just got a whiff of this from the reading that you're doing there. It's like, oh, this clear light, you know, chamber 1, 2, and 3 didn't work for you, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. Oh, okay. Well, it's chamber 46. Okay. Well, none of that worked for you, but this is simple now. Just slough off all this stuff. just get rid of all this stuff. Here it is. This is a list. Dump it. Now you're good. Ask the beloved and you're liberated.
Now here's the scary part about that reading.
Now you're down this far.
maybe the author is implying that you could do that.
I think that he is implying that you could do that, but I think there's a bit of Leslie Ann stand-up or something in here.
But you can, it's like you can stand in liberation, and you can just rid yourself of that, just not be that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this is sort of like the point where it's like, okay, well, you know, good, you had all those other chances, and it just didn't quite work out for you, but, you know, you are still, you have this clear light aspect, you know, you are the beloved. You know, you have been the beloved, or you can be the beloved, or you somehow are the beloved. So now you can just go for the Hail Mary. Just go for
right.
The last minute.
Right.
Just go for the last minute item where you, or it's like, what does he call it, with the dice. You know, well, let's just put everything on midnight.
You know this
just
reminds,
push all your chips out there.
You know, you have
them on
to.
One throw of the dice.
But back to Spinoza, where he says it's this effort at understanding is virtue itself. It's the
mm-hmm.
effort itself, if you stand in this position, is what imbues you with effort, with virtue. By virtue, of course, he means clarity and liberation. So just make the effort to do there and stand in that bold place every once in a while. As the day unfolds for you. See what happens on Saturday when you go visit your friend or you do whatever you're going to do on Saturday. Bring this with you. The other thing that I'm exploring in other places is this idea of asking for help in the group. When you're in group and you ask for help in the group,
mm-hmm.
like Muscle Spark did,
mm-hmm.
there's a sanctification that occurs when you do that. Like you actually stand in a very unique space. You have an opportunity while you're here as well. I know that the default position is just to, as they say in some games, lurk. Right?
Lurk? Okay.
Lurk. What do you got over
David,
there?
There are more comments whenever you're
go
ready.
Ahead. Yeah, I'm ready now.
Antimatter writes, the necessity has increased, so it becomes more possible. And then she adds,
good.
The necessity has increased, so the possibility of picking up your liberation is there.
Absolutely. You can just sidestep these things sometimes. Just, they are not there. But the human mind, the literal part of the human mind just says, oh, yeah, I got to work through every one of those. And you know what? I've got a real problem with pick any one of them. Distrust. So I got to really work through that. Maybe there's a program where I can work through distrust. And you start working on the program, take a couple of workshops, and then maybe you become a teacher on helping people overcome their distrust.
Well, you could call that progress, but I mean, yeah.
And then you're stuck in that cycle of the whole mentation of it. Or you can find a way to stand in a new land, in a new place. And if they tell us what it is. It's called the sanctified womb.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can stand in the sanctified womb, this isn't there. It's just they aren't there. The passions of delusion
mm-hmm.
are inexhaustible. That's the truth. That's what it says. Vow to extinguish them all
mm-hmm.
at once.
Yeah, really, this is just like the
what is that?
Hitchhiker's, it's like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Where you,
in it?
what you do is you just push the button for the impossibility drive, and you just.
So the impossibility drive is that you can stand in this new place, and when you stand in that new place, you're not working through distrust, you're not working through ego, you're not working through these attachments, and because they just aren't there. They just aren't there.
Yeah. Desires, attachments, passions, and aggressions.
They aren't there. Because it isn't in that land at all. It's like suddenly when you've been farming in a different way and you realize there are no weeds. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe you can start to stand in a different way. So what else you got, Ivan? What else you got over there, Dan? Anything? Harry, how we doing?
Just fine, as far as I can tell, David.
All right, I think, but remember this possibility that you can work with the group too. You are being presented with group several times during the week. I know that, not only tonight, but several of you are in many, 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 many group activities during the week. Take advantage of the fact that you have this sacred group that starts to form. And in that moment, that's when you can ask for help in an unusual way. It's true. Of course, we distrust so much we don't believe it. Actually, don't believe it.
David, you said in the introduction you wrote to this week's work that we were almost a group.
Correct.
I think this trust would be the catalyst to provide what was missing.
When we have become more of a group, there will be much more free flow of activity between us. We'll be picking the phone up and saying, you know what, this happened or that happened, or I noticed you said something in the meeting the other day, or read your email and it didn't strike me quite right. There'll be a weaving of the quilt, Harry. The quilt of interactivity will be evident. That part hasn't arisen yet. If we were together, it would be happening more, be more evident. We don't have that opportunity. I don't know who's on tonight, but there might be people from Argentina on, far away as Orange County, California.
Spain.
Spain. They're not on, I don't think, tonight, but they are on Sunday. India. This group from India. This dynamic person just shows up. So maybe we can't physically get together, but we can be together in a different way. Increase the dialogue, and you'll see if it becomes evident for you. Make sense, Harry?
Absolutely. Thank you.
So is that it for tonight, Dan? Are we ready to call it a night? How many do we have wind up with tonight? Okay. So thank you for coming again. We'll call it a night, and we'll launch ourselves into chapter 40, or chamber 47. Hey, we're almost done with the book. And we're done, right, Ivan?
We're bound to be liberated.
All right.
When we finish this book.
That's what I like to hear. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you, everyone.
Next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, David.